From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition of The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest, gleaming and sweating shirtless in the valley somewhere, is the creator and star of hashtag BlackAF. You may know him from being on the show 3 years ago for a show he did called, let me check my notes. Oh, yes, Blackish. Of course, I'm speaking to Kenya Barris. Kenya, so good to have you back. Thank you so much for doing this.
You too, big dog. Thank you for having me.
Not even close. Well, here's the thing I think is really interesting about BlackAF, which is, it reminds me of this thing that people used to say in my neighborhood, which is that he may be loud, but he's not always wrong.
That's right. I'll take that.
But you know what I mean? Because each episode, and you may end up being around a lot of people who say, you know, it's all about slavery. And, you know, it may be repetitive, but it's not wrong.
I will openly debate people that it's, like I said in the show, it is my North Star, and I can, you know, find my way back to most things. Like, how are we going to erase 400 years of generational trauma, you know, and expect, you know, they say it takes 2 to 3 generations for things to normalize, you know, us to get used to two guys kissing or used to this or whatever. How are we going to, what's a generation's 12, 13 years? So we're enslaved for 38 generations. We're going to, you know, normalize and be part of what the society of our oppressors say that we should be within, you know, such a short time. Of course, there's no version of us forgetting the greatest human atrocity and what it, you know, what it did to our DNA and our societal sort of norms. Of course, it's going to have an effect on us.
Well, you know, last time you were here, we were talking about the intersection between comedy and tragedy. And I'd said to you then that Blackish is a show that if you like point it 5 degrees to the left, it's a drama. And that sort of really juxtaposition between comedy and tragedy is really heightened here, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting. I was like, when I got the call to sort of, you know, come and holler at you again, you were one of the early people who early on got the sort of nuances of Blackish that I really wanted to be gotten. And the notion of the relationship between comedy and tragedy really doesn't exist more than Black success. You know what I'm saying? Like, the notion of what should be just, you know, unquestionably some amazing thing, you really see the relationship between what should be an amazing, amazing situation and the tragedy that comes along with that.
No, because what I find so interesting about this show here is that even though it's in a way much more about community than Blackish is, and that there's a constant amount of people from all different walks of Black life, just because clearly it's a budgetary thing, but also we need that noise just so we can see what it is your character, Kenya, is trying to block out.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And I feel like, you know, there is, you know, the thing that I really see is that the idea of you never see how much comedy and tragedy intersect than, you know, in Black success. And I feel like Tyra, you know, who's a friend of mine and arguably one of my best friends, got rich when we were in high school. She was a supermodel. And, you know, being a supermodel, it put her in, you know, the positions where she was in environments with sheiks and, you know, tech billionaires and, you know, family generational wealth. And she, you know, came to me one day and she's like, man, I've never really thought that I'd say this. She's like, but rich people are sad. And I was like, what do you mean? And she, you know, it made me think, and, you know, the idea of us, you know, when you're Black or, you know, socioeconomically depressed, like the notion of your days are full of paying the bills, keeping the lights on, making sure you don't get evicted. And that's your hamster wheel. Once those things are not on your mind as much, you start having to, you know, turn the mirror of life on yourself. And you start having to look at like, oh, shit, am I an asshole? You know, like, do I have like the problem sort of turn around on you? And I feel like in our culture, unfortunately, and in some aspects, sometimes fortunately, but unfortunately, we don't really, you know, when you have a problem, you're depressed or something growing up, your mom says, you know, go take a bath or, you know, pray about it, you know, or go, you know, go to sleep. But when you start having time to like go to therapy, you know, introspect and look at yourself, it changes the notion and the way that we sort of see our lives. And it's, it's rough because for most of us, this is first generation success. So having to actually turn and look at ourselves and explore and introspect like ourselves in a different kind of way, it's a new concept, and it has its trappings.
Well, it's funny because one of the things too is fascinating about this, and especially in dealing with these characters, that the essence of, you know, drama is change, but the essence of comedy is stasis. And the idea of making something funny because it's somebody who basically doesn't change in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. turn up both sides of the coin, is really one of the things I think is kind of the foundation of what you're trying to do with this, isn't it? That this guy can't change and he wants to?
Yeah, and I feel like, and at the same time, he doesn't want to. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's that constant sort of back and forth. You know, it's everybody talks about keeping it real. And it really comes down to, and the lesson that I'm continuing to learn is keeping it honest. You know, just sort of like living your truth. And that truth, in order to really live it, and when you're African American, there's a level of f-ness that is counterculture. You know, I grew up wanting to, you know, celebrating the D-boys and the, you know, the rappers and the athletes, you know, and the accoutrement of what their success, how they sort of presented it, because they were the first ones for me to really see it. But then because I'm a writer and I'm supposed to sort of be theoretically elevated in terms of how I, you know, see the world, I can't express my success in the way that I really wanted to when I was coming up. I have to sort of, you know, I have to have the Prius, you know what I'm saying? I have to have this. And I, you know, there's the version of like me actually living and trying to be happy. I have to have a f-ness, you know, I realize. But I'm battling with that because I do understand that there's parts of it that aren't to my best interest.
It's the truth. My guest who's going to give our editor a whole lot of bleeps to work with is Kenya Barron. She's the star and creator of Black AF, which is on Netflix. As you were talking about that, and one of the things that sort of kept coming up in my head early in Blackish is when Dre is faced with this same thing you're talking about, and wonder if he's spending too much money, and talking about going to buy his clothes from Costco because that's what a responsible person should do. And just how imprisoned he felt by that. And here's the thing. So often in comedy, it's about the protagonist not being able to judge himself but being judged by others. But there's a constancy in this. I mean, even going back to The Game, we talked these things before about you writing characters who are doomed to have to judge themselves.
Yeah. I feel like that's still what I'm dealing with now. I read a quote, you know, a thing from Jay-Z, and I'm talking about him being a prisoner of his success. And I'm obviously not Jay-Z, but the idea of like, he's a dude who grew up loving, you know, being in the club, being in a banquette, you know what I'm saying? And being a part of the thing. But now he's become the fish in the glass bowl. And the very, very reason he did what he was doing, you know what I'm saying? So that he could, you know, pop a bottle in the club, he doesn't enjoy in the same aspect. And I never thought I'd understand it. And now I do. And I hate that I understand what he's saying.
It's funny too, because I guess I wonder if you, by visiting something people think they know from Blackish, if that made you feel like you had to heighten it, because it is heightened in the way that Blackish is not. I mean, the stakes, the emotional stakes are much bigger in this. And I wonder if that was one of the things you thought about when you sat down to write the show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. The comparisons of Blackish makes, you know, they make all the sense in the world, and at the same time, they don't. And I'll explain that the comparisons are that they're both family shows. They're both about my life. They almost stop there. And the meta nature of it is intentional. You know what I'm saying? The idea of, you know, what we're trying to sort of do. But Blackish was a broadband Cipro, you know, if it was an antibiotic, you know, that I was trying to sort of provide for everybody because it was a network television show. I got an opportunity to do this. I was really thoughtful in that I wanted to make sure that my first personal writing, you know, thing out the gate was to do a family show. That's what I love, and that's what I know how to do. But I knew I wanted to, you know, Netflix is going to have 400 plus series this year, not you know, television shows, but series, whole series. And it's really easy to get lost in that kind of situation. And so in order to not be lost, you have to sort of be loud, and you have to be noisy and disruptive. And you have to make sure you're doing it in not a sort of obligatory, you know, a person who's looking for that, you know, sort of way. And so I always feel like the loudest things are the ones that are going to be the most honest. And I wanted to lean in a way and reboot the family show, which is a really tried, you know, and true format, but do it in a way that felt honest and different and unique, but very specific. And I don't think that, you know, I have seen this character yet. I don't think that I've seen this family yet, but I absolutely, not only in my family, probably in some versions of yours and some versions of a lot of people I know, this is a family that I really recognize. Just like the time I did Black-ish, I really recognize that family. But it has, we're continuing to evolve at microwave speed, because as African-Americans, that's what we have to do. We're catching up, and then we catch up and we start surpassing.
No, it's interesting because there is an expansiveness to it, but at the same time, the show is a lot more intimate than Black-ish. I mean, there is a kind of, you're playing to a bigger room, and by heightening the stakes, you actually make it a much more intimate show. Because again, there's a kind of a, I shudder to use this word, but there's a kind of a melodrama in the fact that, again, he's aware of what he's trapped in.
Yeah. You know, it's always the difference between bravery and courage, right? The notion of being brave is you're just a brave person and you take it on. Courage is going in there knowing that there is absolutely a good chance you're going to get up. You know what I'm saying? But you're still going in there. And I feel like the people that I've always celebrated and really admired are the idea of people who sort of know that what they're trying to do is not only are they brave, but they know that there is a good chance that this doesn't end up well, but they still go and do it anyway.
And I think we're talking about the thing that makes this different from a lot of family shows is at the heart of it, there's fear.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a really big part of it. And talk about that, because that to me is the thing that makes a difference. You can almost taste it. That's why I said melodrama, because this awareness of kind of the tragic implications and not being able to really, being told you shouldn't be able to address it. But part of Black culture is addressing everything because it's the one thing we own is the truth. And if that's taken away from us, then we have nothing because we never owned anything for a long time.
Yeah. Fear is my fuel. You know, I'm a huge fan of Reverend Michael Beckwith and The Secret and you know, manifesting. You know, I get it and I understand it. I overstand it. At the same time, it's the opposite of who I am. You know, I don't like say this is going to be good and everything's going to work out, and I just know it because I'm sending out positive. I go into things saying this is probably going to be really f***ed up, and because I'm aware of that, I'm oversensitive and dotting my I's and crossing my T's. You know, because I'm really aware that there's a better than not chance that this is going to fail. And so I think, you know, fear is a fuel that for many of us as African Americans, we are aware of what the police mean to us. We're aware of what the system is to us. We're aware of, and we arm ourselves that, and we tell our kids constantly, like before they even experience it, it's going to be hard for you. And it's not to sort of suppress them, you know what I'm saying? It's to sort of make them so over aware that they over prepare, you know what I'm saying? And they go into a situation knowing that you're probably going to fail. But the only chance you have of not failing is really going into this knowing that you have to be aware of all the things that are going to come your way and be ready for them before they hit you.
That rather profound point is a good place to take a break. The serious gentleman I'm talking to is the star and creator of #BlackAF on Netflix, Kenya Barris. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. My guest, who's an elder statesman of comedy, who's wearing elder statesman on his new show, Black AF. See, I got that. See, that's who I am.
I love it.
Thank you. The man I'm talking about, of course, is Kenya Barris. It's funny because I guess I was thinking that the show, in a way that's really interesting to me, is almost each episode is kind of a dialectical. There's, you know, what I guess thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. Each episode is that.
It's interesting you say that. That is the formula that I learned to write with. You know what I'm saying? Is I approach every show like I'm writing a paper. Every episode like I'm writing a paper in some aspect. You know, like you state something, try to prove it, and then talk about what you just said. You know, and I feel like there is something for me that really works in that aspect because it allows people to understand what they're about to see, then see it, and then talk about what they just saw. I think for me, it helps me keep track of what I'm doing, follow and see the flaws when something isn't, you know, proving itself or doesn't feel like it's informing what I said we were going to be, they were going to be informed about. And at the same time, I think it allows the viewer, if you have a chance, to actually feel like they're being satiated and surprised, but in a familiar way, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. But I just think that idea of it feeling like that to me, where the show becomes, at its foundation, kind of an argument, and then you build everything on top of it, and you have to, you know, you support each aspect of the argument, that at some point, because it's not really a three-act show anymore, or a five-act show, whatever network TV is. It's built towards a climax, at which point it seems to collapse on itself. Mm-hmm. Then you have to write it again. I mean, by balance it, not type it out. And again, I think that's where the dramatic stakes seem to come back, because at some point in every episode, everybody feels lost.
That's you are a you are a TV scientist. No, that is absolutely right. To me, the things that I love are at their best when you feel lost and then you find yourself. But like you want to get lost as a viewer, but then find yourself. And then it's like, ah. And I think that, you know, this is the most polarizing thing I've ever taken on by far. And it was really hard for me because normally any criticism I get, I'm a writer. So I'm behind the camera and I'll take it. But this is criticism. I'm writing it and I'm directing it and I'm on camera. So I took it much more personal. And I woke up last Sunday and I opened my laptop and I checked my email, and stupidly, because I'm a glutton for punishment, I have a Google alert, and it's the Atlantic had did a piece on my show. And I'm like, why are all these people doing think pieces on a comedy? But like the Atlantic had done a think piece on my show, and the Atlantic is like my paper. And it was, you know, leaning. They were saying what I missed and what I didn't understand. It was, you know.
Well, Ta-Nehisi's not there anymore. Is it still your jam?
I mean, you know, historically, it has been my thing. And so I was hurt. I was butthurt when I read it. And as I'm closing my laptop, I get a text. And it's, hey, Kenya, this is Malcolm Gladwell. I hope you don't mind. I got your number from Brian Grazer. Just want to tell you how much I loved your show. And it was like this really, Malcolm Gladwell for me is like if I play basketball, Jordan following me on Instagram, like he is the guy for me. And he also is one of the gods at the Atlantic. So the idea of the same sort of territory, someone can hate it, someone can love it. It's to me, like I said, this show has changed me. It's the most polarizing thing I've done. And what it actually made me see is I don't want to do anything moving forward that doesn't have some version of this. And I don't want to be just do something that feels just, you know, a contrarian, just like I'm just trying to, you know, elicit some sort of controversy. But then I talked to a writer today and she told me, like, we forget because it's TV and it's entertainment, but I'm a writer and that's an artist. So we're doing art with a small A. And the whole purpose of art, if you go to a museum, you don't like all the paintings. You know what I'm saying? If you walk out of a movie and you just say, let's go get something to eat, that movie was a failure. The whole purpose of art is to start a conversation. And that conversation has to open itself up to different points of view. And I want to make sure everything that I do moving forward starts a conversation, you know, and I feel like this show has had more conversation than anything I've ever worked on. And I'm surprisingly satiated with the negativity, if that makes sense.
It does. It's the treatment. My guest who just compared a Canadian intellectual to Michael Jordan is Kenya Barris. His new show as creator and star on Netflix is hashtag Black AF. But I was going to ask this to you because I would say there's a big part of you that loves the idea of ruffling feathers and making people react and pay attention to things that they don't want to see, partially because that's so much of what the Black experience is anyway, but also just because there has to be a part of you that got bored with just having to, you know, as you put it, be on that hamster wheel of basically having to pay off everything the way that satisfied people and congratulate you for watching something rather than be disturbed by it. And as you were saying that you've been hit personally kind of hard by it, I guess there's part of me that thought that you were waiting for that, that you wanted to brook that kind of response and wanted to have people react to you as an actor in some way that made them pay attention to what it is they're not seeing in the world.
You would think that, and I should have, but I think because I was so in the weeds on this one, because I was so, you know, the acting component of it made me really have to like invest myself so deeply in it that I couldn't, you know, see outside of that. I did not expect it like it happened. And I, you know, this is, Black has changed my life, and it's the, you know, the biggest thing I've ever done, but this is the best thing I've done. And I think it's not that it's better than Black, it's just more personal. And I feel like I'm proud of the conversation, bad or good, that it continues to create, because I feel like we need to have more conversation interculturally to push us forward. We can't, like, the notion of, like, you keep hearing, like, young people started, you know, you would hear this safe space thing, you know, safe spaces. There's nothing more dangerous than a safe space. There's nothing more dangerous than a group of people who all think the same, promoting one another. You know what I'm saying? That's the least safe space to be. Like, you need to be in a situation with people who are open to exiting a conversation differently than entering. And the only way that can happen is sort of stirring stuff up. You know, and I follow one track on Twitter. I saw someone talking stuff about the show. And by the end, you know, everyone responded to them. By the end of a 3-day back and forth, they had written, watched it again, and they really enjoyed it. And I was like, that to me is the, you know, I wanted to like actually just print it all out and frame it. That to me is the example of what you want, you know, are lucky enough to create something that other people enjoy. You want that. You want people to be able to sort of go through a metamorphosis with, the, you know, the thing that you brought to the screen.
See, I thought that was part of your intent, because the other thing that this show does that you didn't get a chance to do before, and I think is really interesting, is that it examines the impact of the judgments of various types of Black feminine sexuality in ways that we haven't seen in shows before. And because Blackish, we talked about that the last time, is that it, furthering that argument by viewing Black feminine archetypes, if you will, and examining that and having that discussion in ways that we're not used to seeing, let alone in a comedic context.
I have three daughters, and because, you know, my oldest, I have six kids, my oldest three are girls, my youngest three are boys. And because, if nothing else, I've just been here longer with them. I'm closer right now with my girls. And I am seeing, even from the oldest to the youngest in the girls, there is a, you know, a pop feminism movement. You know what I'm saying? And it particularly, I see it with, in Black culture, because, you know, the intersectionality of feminism, the feminist movement and the civil rights movement happened at the same time. You know what I'm saying? And so the notion that Black women luckily chose being Black instead of being women at the time, and because the civil rights movement would have happened without them, they did not have that. They didn't take place in that with that movement while it was happening, for the most part. And so now you're seeing Beyonce, Megan Thee Stallion, you know, just different sort of imagery and voices come out of that at this particular moment. And it's really interesting, and it hasn't really been, you know, people don't talk about it a lot, but I'm seeing it with my daughters. I'm seeing it with my wife. I'm seeing it with, you know, women that are friends. There is a new voice and a new sort of like awakening amongst that, you know, that group of, in our country. And it's, I love talking about it. It's interesting you're talking about that. I think a lot of that will be a part of, you know, season two, if we do it, like the notion of, there's something new on the block, and what do they have to say?
See, for me, that is the other side of the coin of the talk that we all got, young Black men from our elders about the way you have to act when you go out if you got pulled over by the police. This is the feminine side of that that we haven't seen explored before in a way that just didn't kind of make fun of it or reduce it to basically a stereotypical argument. And I thought you seem to be intent on is just provoking people in the best way and making people want to think about these things. But also it's, again, about a dilemma where if you've risen to a certain status, you should be consequently relieved of having to think about yourself in a certain way. And for people of color, that's not the case. That almost never changes.
That's absolutely right. To me, it's really sad. And it's also kind of scary because it doesn't allow for growth. You know, the notion that we, by the nature of our positioning in the tableau of Americana, like we are not really given the opportunity to sort of change position, which is essential to sort of success. And I feel like, you know, one of the things when we last spoke, I was like off camera, you and I, there was someone in common that we talked about and you kept it unbelievably real with me in terms of you're like, I don't like that guy. And I immediately was like, I was like, I like Elvis because the nature or the notion of so much of us, we have to just praise everything that is black and this sort of like opinion is, you know, whatever the generalized opinion is, we all have to take that same opinion. But the people, the real thought leaders are not afraid to say, I'll go against that. I'm saying, and this is why, and I'm not trying to be just contrary, but I go against that. And this is who I am, love it or hate it. You know, and I, to me, that is what I, you know, looked for in the show. And that's what I was trying to do in the show. So, you know, I think the people that we're seeing right now and the conversations that we are really remembering are the ones that feel like people who are not willing to let it hang out. And that's what I was trying to do in the show.
I guess I have to ask you what it felt like emotionally for you to have got through this, to have accomplished this, to have just made these episodes.
I mean, I'm still dealing with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is, you're one of the last, like, sort of, you know, versions of like talking about it. You know, I respect for you, man. I wanted to make sure I have these conversations. I'm still really dealing with it, but it was so cathartic for me. You know, a lot of I think that's why I said this is for me such a special thing because it's so personal. And, you know, hats off to Ted and Cindy and Reed and the guys at Netflix for letting me sort of take this swing because I'm going through a divorce, I'm always dealing with my lackings as a father. I'm always dealing with my fears as a writer. You know, I'm always dealing with the notion of how I feel about myself and things like that. So to be able to work through that on screen with the public was actually really, really helpful. And I go back and I watch things even now. I watch months of now and I'm like, I'm dealing with that right now. So it was a very, very, very huge blessing to be able to do this while I'm actually involved in it.
We're out of time. I can't thank you enough for doing this, Ken. Really, thank you. I know you got a lot of things going on.
Thank you, man.
Time with this, so no, my pleasure. My guest, who apparently puts me after Marc Maron, is Kenya Barris. He's the star and creator of #BlackAF on Netflix. A recording engineer who's also mixing the show and editing, so she's going to be very busy. Is Kat Yore. To better days, everybody. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.